Nes wel, dyma'r as yr eis yn yw siarc nis molyr y chrysna ag Paddy McBride agos ta heliw la togald agos gael ffadaton agos y siomir o ddron sian y hila. Ie'n am ddarn i hild. Paddy, I'd like to start with your uncles. You mentioned the man you met, your cousin in Montana, was it like Jimmy Duffy?
Yeah.
On your mum's side, three of your uncles left.
Yeah.
To go to the gold rush, is that so, Paddy?
Well, one of them was particular, you know.
Right.
Can I start then?
Oh, yeah.
Well, my mother was Duffy, born not far from our own old home. She was an American at the time. And all her sisters and brothers went to America, except one. And I think she had five brothers in America and three sisters. She was in America herself when she came back and got married, my father. But this one particular brother, he was a Dennis Duffy. Dennis went to the States very young. And of course, with the gold rush being on in Montana and all, Dennis went down to Montana, him and I put a few pals there. And he remained in Montana. And after some years, the last contact him. All his other brothers was in New York. There was four of them or five of them in New York. There was Charlie and Paddy and Dan and John and Huey. But they lost contact with him for a lot of years. And then one of Charlie's sons tried to contact through the Circle of Row.
Yeah.
And he never could seem to get any contact.
Uh-huh.
He could get Duffy to answer him, but he never could get the right people. But during my time in Iran, that's where I met Dennis Duffy's son, my own cousin, after all them years.
Imagine.
And his dad was dead at that time and gone, you know. And we just happened to meet. I was in a bit of business and walked in. He walked into the office, put out his hand. He says, "I'm Jim Duffy," he says. "Bred and born in Mount Butte, Montana."
My God.
He says, "My dad was somewhere at Donegal." He says, "I don't know where."
He couldn't pronounce the name even.
So he couldn't, you know, he had no trace of area at all.
Not at all, no.
Well, that rings a bell, because he says, "My mother was Duffy. And she always spoke us about her brother, Dennis Duffy, that's in Butte, Montana. That's my dad," he said.
My God.
I said, "We got to know it so well, even when we were growing up kids, she used to have it on her knees, say a prayer for him, you know."
Yeah.
He would turn up sometime.
But he never returned home.
But he never returned. He's buried down in Montana High.
But he must have done all right on the gold rush.
They must have. He had a family down there. I've no history on them, only just meeting this one fella, you know.
Yeah.
But there's another uncle that would be interested in to tell you. He was a Huey Duffy, he was a twin. And the twin died after 3 months or something, buried down here in the local graveyard. But this Huey fella, some of the people took the mother out one time for a holiday to America. And this Huey boy was 14 at the time. And he went with her. But when he got out, he wouldn't come back. Now, he never came back. And there's something about the twin, you see, he had that mystery about him. But he worked himself up anyway, and as he got older, and nobody could find him where he was, any contacts of him at all. So there was another chap, a relation of his in this part of the country. He was a chauffeur. And big people had all chauffeurs that time, and they would go out to the different places, the taxi men with their uniform on them and their cap, and they would wait for the people. So this man got parked behind this taxi, this car anyway. He said, "That looks like Huey Duffy in there." So sure enough, he got out and up to the bar. And here it was Huey. He was a chauffeur. Of course, he promised him he would call when he got back, and he would ring them, he would do a million things. But Huey had never turned up. But then when the war came on, and the chauffeurs went all off. So Og kostet oss da den var det utsatt. So he had one brother Dan that never married, a very steady man. He worked in the plumbing all his life and had all his mates who'd go out on the weekend for their couple of highballs, as they called it, and so forth. But meeting up with somebody in the bar anyway, he talked about this brother. Well, the man says, that man's working along with me. He says, the security man down in so-and-so place, he said, give Dan the address. And Dan called a dozen times, but he was always off duty. So he met this man again in the pub the following weekend or sometime, and he told him, he says, well, the man said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll tip you off, he says, and when he's on duty, he says, he has to come to the door. And you ring the bell, he says, he has to come to the door. So he tipped the Dan off anyway. Sure enough, Dan went down, and there was Hughie in front of him with his uniform and all the rest and on him. And of course promised he would call, he would ring and do whatnot, but Dan saw him a few times then, but the next thing he disappeared again, and nobody knew, he thought, well, he's gone. But apparently after that, he got the pension at the time, and he rented some apartment of some place. And after lots of time, the landlady of the apartment rented to him. She just couldn't see him, he disappeared. So she went through the room, but he left a lot of his clothes still by the room. She went through the pockets anyway, she got some phone numbers. She started phoning. Sure enough, she got a sister of his. So her and another sister called to see her. His clothes was all in the room just as he left them. Anyway, they told her they would pay up for the apartment a month in advance, and if he didn't turn up, to let them know, and they would come up and clear the apartment. So the time went past anyway. As she rang them up, he never returned, so they came up and cleared the apartment, and that's it. And they pronounced him dead. So the word came to his brother here, and Kilmacleugh here, to say that he must have been mugged. He was praying for the chapel over there.
My God.
So that was fine. What did he do at the time? He left most of his stuff behind him, but he went to home and he still had some bits and pieces with him. And after about 7 years after it, the home, he died in the home, and there is sad story in his pockets, and they got phone numbers and different things. And they contacted the people that concerned again. They went up and gave Hughie a decent burial. After all them years, you know,
imagine,
when you think
yeah.
of it.
Yeah.
Funny, I met him when I was in New York. His brother took me there. It just happened one of these things. He was on duty, you know. And he always remembered me. He was the picture of this brother that never left home. Same.
Yes, in Belgium.
Study,
yeah,
not
yeah.
too big, you know.
Yeah.
That was Hughie. So, that was the end of it. But what is the brother that he said that got him prayed for? He was supposed to be mugged, you know. The brother here got him prayed for. The brother was dead long before him.
My God. Well, that's how it goes, isn't
that's
it?
How it goes. I think it goes.
But that's how at the time, Paddy, the way life was. People just left home and never returned.
They weren't fit to return.
No, there was nothing here for them either, maybe.
No, nothing for them, and a lot of them couldn't return. They never got that much. If they ever got married out there, that was it. There was one other brother of my mother's, Charlie Duffy. He went to the States very young. He got married, of course, had a family. But he was in the plumbing business all his life, and he brought his family into the plumbing business. And even his brother, that was a bachelor, to come into the plumbing. But with the health, his wife was always sick, never well, you know.
Yeah.
And with the cost out there at that time, there was no provision for that. Everything had to be paid. And Charlie never could afford to come back.
No, he couldn't. So he stayed just forever.
And he had 65 years down in America when his two sons took him back here.
My God.
After all that time.
Yeah.
And
It would be just a different world to him.
It's a different world to him, you know. But he enjoyed his time. He stayed up at the old home, and we went to see him often. And a great crack with him, you know. But he wouldn't remember much about
his youth, not really.
About his old days there, no, and all, because he left too young, you know.
Yeah.
That was mostly all my mother's people. Except there was another, this Dan, he never married. Dan was one of these steady workers.
Yeah.
Had his own apartment store and so forth, and had his pals, went out for the drinks at the weekend and so forth. But they're all dead now.
Yeah.
A lot of them's gone.
But what about on your dad's side then?
My dad's side had, my dad would be the oldest, he had two brothers and a sister. And the sister was the oldest, she married a local man here, Bernard Lafferty. But my father, he had a brother, Johnny. And Johnny worked around the different contracts here, you know, he used to do a lot of fencing at that time. There were the government fences, and someone would put them up for them, you know, remember the old time of fences. But Johnny had got married at a little house built up here on the home farm. And he had two girls and a boy. I think the boy would be 6 months old when the mother died. And there were very little for him left then. The sister took the family over then, and she reared them. And he went to Britain, same as my father. And he, after years and years, he remarried in Britain. He married a Scotch woman. And they reared another three boys and two girls. He's gone now for quite a number of years.
So he never returned home either?
Oh, he did. He come regular on holidays.
All right.
Always, he'd always come back to the old home.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all he could afford, you know, just that.
Yes.
They couldn't afford that, him to come and stay in a hotel or do nothing. But then he had his oldest son that was born here. He was a Jim McBride. And funny, Jim married a girl just up beside us where you were the other day, the name of Carlos. And there were 15 of the family all living. And there was two dead. There were 17 in the family. And two of them died at babies. And the other 15's all living, well, they're all married now, scattered all over Britain. Uh-huh. There are two or three of them in your own country over there. But Jim never went to Britain. He worked here with the Forest Department. He worked with the different places all around his life. And very interesting fellow, a good Irish speaker.
Is he?
He was brought up with his granny's people, and they were all Irish speakers. And Jim could talk full class
Irish.
But at one time, he had all his sons went to Scotland. And there was nine of them worked on the one contract with McCartman. Nine brothers worked with the one contractor. And some site in Britain, I think it was Sellafield or somewhere. But it was interesting, you know, to know it. And funny enough then, the two girls, one married local here and one married, she's in England. And then the youngest boy that was 6 months old when the mother died, he was reared with her aunt. Funny enough, he married Sidney's sister, you know, and they lived in Glasgow, or near Glasgow somewhere. And he's dead now too, he's gone too, but the wife's still living. But the sister my father had, Bridget Lafferty, she was the mother. She had a big family in the old Thatch house. She happened to be the grandmother of the Creech the Millionaire, you might have read about
I've heard of him
some
yeah.
years ago, that went to America and met Mrs. Jukes, or whatever her name was. But they're all gone now too. So that was the one sister and two brothers he had. And the youngest brother, my father, he left here when he was 14. I think he kind of stole away, he didn't tell nobody. But I used to all hear my father talk about the mother sent him after him the morning he left to take him back. He was too young. You'd walk that time a mile or a mile and a half to get whatever transport was going. So he had a pound in his pocket, so he says, I give him the pound, he says, and I tell him, wish him good luck. And off he goes. And he spent his lifetime in Britain.
Did he return?
Always for a holiday.
Yeah.
Just for a holiday. And he went into construction too. And of course, there was always, my father went over, he'd always went to him, you know, and he was sure. And a lot of more neighbours, people that were around, all went, and he always would get them a job. And he was in the construction up till the day he retired. And some of his family followed in the same footsteps, but not all of them, you know. So that was my father's people.
Yeah.
That's one of the grandson of his now that wrote the family tree.
Yeah, I saw it. Sadie showed it to me.
That's a lot. He has somewhat a lot different maybe than what I would have, you know.
Yeah.
But he has most of it okay.
Most of it is fine, I'd say. He's done some research. But Paddy, you talked about thatched houses then a wee while ago. Was your home a thatched house?
It was all thatched. Our home was all thatched. Even the outhouses were thatched. And that, in them days, they used to maybe try and get a bit of some of the corn that would grow, you know, scutch the seed off it and keep it for thatching the dwelling house. And other people used to grow the flax. That was very good for thatching. And maybe some of the older houses, the byres, the stables, it was just rush cut.
Yeah.
And there was such was rush. And of course, it was all the straw ropes at that time. You made the straw ropes.
You would, yeah.
And they were all tied down with the straw ropes. Anytime we touched the old doings, we used to hit it probably in the evening. At night, it might be dark, you'd be afraid of your life. The more you twisted, the longer the rope was getting. You'd be going away down the street and it pitch dark and you'd be afraid of your life, somebody would run away with you.
You've done it often, Paddy?
Done it often, aye.
Did you put thatch up?
No, I never put the thatch up at all. I always watched them to do it. Well, then in my young day, I'll be about 12 or 14, maybe I wouldn't be 14, about 12. That was when my father then and my mother decided they were a grant that time, which wasn't very much. So they tumbled the old house and they rebuilt it, which you saw there.
Yeah. Oh, well, you took me up to the house, but they knocked the old house down.
They knocked the old house down, and that house was built in the same spot.
Same site.
So from there on, as my brother got older, he was a very handy type of fella. He rebuilt all the rest of the houses, the byres and the stables and the sheds. And
right.
That's put different roofs on them, you know. Uh-huh. Thatch was done away with. But the old thatch, there was a trade in the thatching. Because if it wasn't done proper, you'd have the drops coming through, you know.
You would. It's a great skill, though, wasn't it?
Like? Aye. So that was the thatch.
Yeah. But Paddy, you remember your old home, you took me up to see it, and it was lovely, a lovely area too. But you remember the cows down at the end of the house, Paddy?
I remember the cows and the stable for the horse. That was all up against the kitchen. And the old days, they seemed to have the byre as close to the dwelling house as possible, in case anything would happen to the cattle. You know,
yeah.
They could find that more than the cattle would let if there were anything wrong. The cattle were very important at that time because you had your milk. And of course, they'd always churned, made the butter. The cow was very, very important. And so was the pig.
You have pigs, yeah?
Ours used to keep two pigs. And the pig was always fed on what would be left after the dinner. They used to buy a bag of this meal. And all the potatoes and everything was left after the dinner. There was a bit of meal shook out to them, and that was the pig's fed. And very important that they get the pig ready for the market in 3 months. If the pig wasn't fed, he grew long instead of fattening.
You had to feed him well.
And he was of no value when he got too old. 3 months was about the limit for the pigs, you know. My mother always kept two pigs, and them two pigs was going to the market and said, where is the clock? They always paid for something. The rents or rents or whatever it was.
But you had a fair to hear in Creasla, didn't you?
You had a fair every 10th of the month in Creasla. And the people that reared the pigs took all their pigs there to Creasla so you could buy two pigs. So forth, you know. Or you might get half a dozen people with pigs, solid pigs.
Yeah. Must have been great crack of fair, did
it? Oh, the crack of the fairs was mighty in them days. And all the daily would be all done, the forenoon or on to the evening. The evening time, mostly you'd get the carry this, you'd get them in the pub and they'd be looking for looks, Penny, and all this old crack, you know. So I heard a good joke one time, this was a joke about the old horse dealer. He was getting down and out of this, he was getting kind of old, but he had just the one horse and he was at the fair in Milford or somewhere, and he took the horse down, he tied him at the pub door, and the horse's head was hanging away down to the ground. So inside he was having a bee, and the boys was having the crack with him, and someone asked him, would he sell the horse? So he said he would. So the fellow said, I'll give you so much for the horse. He says, I wouldn't go out and waken him for it, he said.
Oh, jeez.
That's some of the jokes, you know.
Yeah. But Paddy, you remember going to that fair often, like yourself, like when you were a youngster?
Going where?
Going to the fair day.
Oh, yes, the fair day for us were youngsters. But mostly you'd get over in the evening, you know. That time there'd be a lot of the barricade down. Uh-huh. That would be the fun where all the young ones on the street, and you'd get groups of them at that time. Everybody walking, of course. They would talk about being a dad somewhere, usual, how do you do, or so forth. But always good fun. You always wanted to get to the fair over the evening. You wouldn't be so much on the rest of the morning.
During the daytime, you wouldn't. But there were no cars, Paddy, sure, at the time.
There were no cars at that time. You might get the doctor with a car, or maybe some publican might have a car. There were just no cars. And I think one of the pubs in Creasla, I used to hear the old people talking about they had a hackney car. You could book it for a somebody come on holidays to take them somewhere, you know, or something like that. So that was about it that day. But I was all walking. We walked to school, we walked back, we walked to the church.
Everywhere and
along with your mother. That was another thing that I'd done every Sunday. First stop was the graveyard. You went to the grave to say a prayers. We were only boys, and you'd meet, see this, all the different people at the graves. You would get to know who they were. She'd be talking to them. The day I went out there now, and I can even know graves that I saw people that my mother would be talking to. But funny enough, in the old graveyard, in them days the graves was, the soil was heaped up, weren't level. People had marks on them, and you could always tell the different graves, you know, maybe where a mark was stone or anything. But then we got a priest here one time, Father Tom, and he decided that he would level the whole graveyard. And a lot of the graves lost at that time. People weren't here to claim their grave.
They lost their marks?
They lost them. Yeah. The spots down there yet now that there's just nothing on and nobody knows. Yeah. Yet there are people buried in.
Of course there are, yeah.
Aye.
Yeah.
That's the...
Old Doe Cemetery, yeah.
Old Doe Cemetery, yeah. Aye.
There's an old chapel in there too, Paddy, do you remember?
That is the chapel. That's the chapel we went to.
Oh, that's the one you went to?
Aye.
But when was it knocked down?
It was knocked down sometime during my time away. This new one was built in Creasla.
But why was the old one knocked? Sure, there was nothing wrong with it, was
it? It's in the book there. Oh, it must be knocked down about... I would say it would come down something about the 70s.
Yeah.
At that time of year. I remember my brother coming back. He died in the 70s. And I remember him taking him to his corpse to Doe Graveyard, to Doe Chapel. And that's where the mass was there. That would be, he died in the 70s. Very early 70s, the church would be knocked down and the new church built. And, a lot of people didn't want it knocked down. There was a big argument about that time. And a lot of people from the other end of the area said it'd be too far to come to Creasley, you know, and all that. But but then the things have changed so much now with the modern transport.
Well, that's it. Like everybody
house has a car now.
Yeah, and a few cars even.
So that was it.
But see, going back to your old house, Paddy, like You were in the neighbourhood of Neil McGillivray. Did you hear much stories about him, any stories about Neil?
I used to hear a lot of stories, but I remember when we were young, he'd be getting a bit old at that time, but I still remember he used to had a horse and he had this cow.
Yeah.
And then my mother and the woman next door maybe take the turns about goat and we wanted to churn.
Yeah.
And of course the milk would be churned and of course they would get a top of this butter, take back the same as something like the size of the dudes there.
Yeah, yeah.
And we loved this butter, we all wondered who was going to go to churn for them today.
Yeah.
And but then in his older days then, his old people could tell you a lot of different stories about him, you know, and all the songs he made and the recitations and all the different things. But I remember us coming from school, walking coming from school the day they took him to the hospital. That was the last time he was back in the old home. He went that time to Letterkenny Hospital and he came back then to a nephew, he was Kelly. And he stayed with him till he died.
Right.
And then, of course, Kelly fell in for the... I'll show you the place up there where he lives. It's just not far from our old home.
It wasn't far from where you lived.
No, it's quite close, yeah. Though.
But you remember him well, Paddy? And
oh, I remember him. I remember seeing him, aye.
And you learned
something? We used to be said, oh, one time he was sick. I remember me and the boy next door, the same age. The mother would give you a wee basket, bag of wee clods or wee sticks.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, the tea we would... He was in bed, he wasn't fit to get up. We used to go and be warm to make put on the fire, you know.
You did wee chores and, yeah.
And then we'd have the tea for him and get the tea in bed. And we'd have to lift him up and he would get himself straight up. Then he would take the tea. And of course, we'd come back with some bucking out armour that he would have, maybe some old pipes or a cow horn that he used to blow on.
Oh, gee.
This sort of stuff.
But was he all right to get on with, Paddy?
Oh, he was, aye. Yeah. He was all right to get on with. I remember us going over to Pete one time. I remember us two or three young fellas going over with the donkeys and cradles. And we'd take the Pete out for where the horse and cart could get at them, you know.
Yeah.
That sort of business. Yeah. Wee bits like that I remember about him.
Just giving him a hand.
Give him a hand.
Yeah.
That was one thing about that time. I mean, you always help your neighbour.
Yeah. And that was the policy of it.
That was the policy. It was like the crops. If somebody was behind me digging the potatoes and you finished,
you'd help them.
You were sent to them the next day, you know, and that was...
There wasn't a question even. Did you learn some of his songs, Neil McGillivray? Just
no, I never heard. I might know odd words, you know.
In English, maybe you wrote them?
No, I don't know them in Irish, no.
No.
But there's a whole book of songs out on him.
Yeah.
He had lots of them.
He was gifted, wasn't he?
He was gifted with them, aye.
Yeah. And I suppose you often heard the story.
He was buying glass for the wee one day, one day, and a smaller one day, this is a crack to the head. One day wouldn't be as big as that there, you know.
Yeah.
But it was all wee pens. One day, that would open was permanent.
I know, yeah.
So he was buying pens for the glass. And one day, some of the hardware shops one time, and someone said, a lot of pens, is that one day, Neil? I said, if there was many a year better, he said, you wouldn't be giving me a own chat, he said. You know, much like that.
Yeah. You often heard of the story that he was arrested for having his
name. I read that story about the rest for the name of the cat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
That was a good one, yeah.
He was sent to jail for it, even. But, Paddy, we left bits out the last day. You worked in Malta as well, Paddy.
Aye.
And you worked with a neighbour of my own, even Francie Boyle, you said?
Oh, there was Francie Boyle and there was McCall. Oh, there were a lot of people from that part of the country there at the time. And most of them had their wives out there too. There was a lot of Malta was a very good area for getting apartments and all that sort of business, you know.
Uh-huh.
And good for hotels, a lot of second class hotels that you could stay in. We all got rented apartments when we were out there.
And what was the job you were doing in Malta?
The job was on the building oil tanks on the ground.
Right.
And first of all, this ground had to be all tunnelled out. And there were 36 foot diameter that when you dug them out. And That went on night and day, and the system that had to take all the material out when it was blasted was a conveyor system. It came out because you had to go up a ramp. Because to get the guy to get down deep enough, you had to go down this ramp right away down till you got enough overhead above, you know.
I do understand.
And then when we had all the tunnels out, the first thing they done, they put in the formation in the bottom. What's the circle, the same as the tank. And then there were a Chicago Bridge Company come in, American Company come in. It was them that erected the tanks. Very nice couple of fellows in front of it too. Very helpful people. So when the tank was set in, the tank would be 40 foot diameter, 40 foot length. And it was placed back in into the section that was up, was pulled back with one shift. It was like pushing your hands in together there. And then the welder would round the circle, they welded the circle. And then it was rotation all the time. Now the tanks weren't all just one big long tank. There were some main axes going through, and the tanks were on off each side that you'd have, same as your fingers now, you'd have 1, 2, 3, 4 off the main axis, you know. But then some of the tanks sent to the docks, there was an access tunnel. That would be a smaller type of semi, about 12 by 12. And that's where all the pipes were taken from the tanks right out to the docks. That was very interesting work there because...
Was it going out far?
All the stuff came out on the wee rail tracks going on, and the wee Jubilee skips that they got, the wee engine, and you had the boys in there. That's what Francie Boyle and them all was, that type of... And you had the wee Emco for loading the skips and taking it all out. And funny enough about the tunnel, if you ended at night and the equipment is downstairs the wing stopped at 12 o'clock for your go for your meal, you'd get nothing in the tunnels but cracking. You find the cracking, you think there were people talking.
And
the natives there, they used to cut little holes out of the side of the wall and they put a holy cattle in it. You get them cattle all the way along the tunnel. That was their belief, you know. There were a couple of fellows killed in there, right enough. Funny enough, there was a young fellow boy, there was from Dunlow, a very nice young fellow. He got killed there very simple one night. There was another fellow worked for the American company, got killed. It's about two or three got killed during the construction, but you know, but it was... But when you were out underground all day, that was the... You didn't know what the weather was like, a bomb. You come outside, the heat.
The
wasn't too hot now, but there was plenty of heat. But you'd see that sun getting you when you'd come out, you know.
You would. You'd be glad to be down underground.
You'd be glad to get out. Then we had... We used to pipes along with air conditioning, you know, kids, to blow air down if you want to keep the... Because you'd have to, after you blast, you see you got a terrible smoke and dust.
Would.
So you had to extract this here and there and try and draw it up.
And did you have locals working for you there?
All locals working for us, aye.
Right.
But there were a hell of a lot of UK, a lot of Irish there. Like there would be foremen and drillers and different things, some machine men and all that sort of business.
So were the locals good workers, Paddy? Like
you could pick out, there were like everything else, you could pick all the good out of them, and they turned out, after training them, they were very good. But then you got other ones that you couldn't train nothing. They used to have to take them out of the tunnel altogether, you know. But what interesting, very interesting.
Did you like Malta, Paddy?
Oh, I liked Malta, lovely island.
Yeah.
Because on your weekend, if you were off, it was nice going out to the different bays, a lot of nice bays and hotels and all along the place.
Nice people too?
They're nice people too, aye. They're nice people.
So how long did you spend there, Paddy?
I was about 3 years in Malta. And at the end of the, funny enough, at the end of it, my brother was there too, the younger brother. He was a captain of the charge hand there. And the two are staying in the flat most of the time. But it was winding up at the time we left. My father took part at that time and we got a message. I didn't think he would live long, so we go back to see him, and then we got released. Then the company didn't want us, things were easy down a bit then, you know. So after Malta, then this younger brother, he went away out to somewhere in New Guinea, I think, on a contract with the company. And I went down to the South America, down to the Caribbean. That was our oil down there. Very nice place, very interesting place. And, we used to be out on the platforms to take the fast lunch, a good hour, an hour and a half, to go out to the shore, out to see where the platforms were, you know. That was very interesting.
Which was the nicest place you worked, Paddy? Like, which was the one?
I would say we sailed the Caribbean down in South America. Was the nicest place as ever it was. You know, very nice place. I would say that would be about one of the nicest ones. Now, South Africa was very nice. Around the Cape Providence, it was very nice. Lovely country. Them two places would be...
they would be tops, yeah.
Be top sales, you know.
Did you ever go back on holiday, Paddy, to
Oh, either. Now, our first contract was 18 months. That's back. But then, after some years, they had to change that system. So it was 6 months abroad and 2 weeks holidays.
Right.
Now, when I went to Nigeria, like it was, I went out here in the summer. Funny enough, I was back for Christmas because the 6 months was up. And then I went back again. And I was back for the summer holidays again. And 18 months was up at Christmas again. I was home for most Christmas.
So it was working out all right.
It worked out that way. Yeah. But for some, it didn't always work out that way.
Yeah. But Paddy, what I meant was, did you ever go back on holiday to visit some of the old towns?
No, I never went back. The only place I went back to was up to Pitlorry. I never went back to any other contracts now.
Well, went up to Pitlorry last year?
Last year went up to Pitlorry. I was thinking maybe my nephew there was at me there now. We might have a trip to Malta maybe this summer if we get living in Wales.
You're looking forward to it, yeah?
I would love to see it.
Yeah. I bet you will. Well, why not, sure?
Oh, why not? Yeah. I would have a trip out to it.
But there was a lot of English occupied in Malta at the time you were there, wasn't there, Paddy?
The one at that time there, that changed all that time. Funny, we never had no trouble in Malta. Everything was very peaceful, you know. But you had you had the occupation of that. I think it was before we went there that all happened.
Just before you went?
I think it was before we went there.
Right.
I think it was very peaceful when we were there in Malta.
Were you ever recorded on the radio, Paddy, with your stories? And have you been recorded?
No.
I bet you're enjoying putting your stories down.
It's interesting. I have very good memories. I can go.
I
can go back, and you know all the times you think of yourself. Yeah. You wonder the hell how you got to some of these places.
Exactly. It is strange, you know, when you think about the places.
I was on holidays here one time, and I was called back to London office. I had to get a medical to go somewhere abroad now, I forget what it was. But the boss that was dealing with me, he says, "You're a wanted man." I says, "Well, what do I do now wrong?" He says, "There'll be three project managers in here for you this week, and every one of them wanted you to go with them on their contract."
Yeah.
You know, that was some...
That was some achievement.
Some achievement, you know.
Yeah, but you were experienced, and you were good at the work.
I says, "So three of them now." He says, "You can please yourself now what you think." Oh, I says, "I'll stick to it. We'll have the medical, I'll go to abroad, whatever it was."
What about when you were very young in your home that you took me up to the last day, Paddy? You used to have a lot of, I can't remember what you call it, but visiting, people in visiting every night.
Oh, they had the rakers every night.
What did you call it?
Raking.
Raking, yeah.
That's what we called it that time. And then, of course, there was the house next door. Dave McGinnis, they were at families the same age as us. But then the house next door, they were the Collinses.
Yeah.
That was the raking house. And the old man was a fiddler all his life. And there were always a couple of fiddles about it. And there were more young people there to play the fiddles. And there'd be big open fire, there'd be a couple of big sticks across it. And he was getting very old at this time, but he loved to see you coming.
Yeah.
And the stories.
You'd tell some stories.
The young crowd, we would go up first. And then maybe the bigger ones would come a bit later. We might get the run because we'd be active, you see, so he would have to go. But funny enough, then, if you didn't go back the next night, he would always be saying, I didn't do nothing on them.
No.
So wonder they're not here.
Yeah. No. He liked you to become.
It was interesting how he said.
A lot of old stories about ghosts and fairies.
Well, there were more people come there, and they would put the stand in the head of your hair on your head. Tell you about where they saw the ghosts and where they met them. Yeah. I wouldn't go now from here till shed up there in the dark. I was so afraid. I used to run to the neighbor's house, and the father of that people, he would have to take me over and leave me halfway over, maybe to our own house, and he would keep shouting, "Are you there? Run, keep going." I was all right, but he would keep talking, and by his I would run too.
Oh, I bet you.
All the stories that you get.
But they're your memories, though. You remember some of them, Paddy, and.
Oh, ghosts. That fellas tell you what about these ghosts and how they had to stand aside, let them pass, and so forth, all the different stories. Very nice people there.
You've met a lot of people on your travels.
Oh, Christ, I've met people of all descriptions on your travels.
Yeah.
Irish, England, and Scots. That's another thing, too, we found about even in the Highland schemes and different schemes. We had all different people there, the English, Scots, and ourselves. And you all seemed to get on terribly well together. Even in the bar, if you were drinking, all making jokes, you could call the English bar and Libby so and so, or you'd call your so and so Paddy.
Yeah, but you still got on.
It was still all good good jokes.
Good banter, You got on well with the English,
you
Paddy.
Get on well with people. Funny, there's a tack and handling people. I always found it. Even to get them to do work or do something right, you know. There's no point in taking them the aggressive way because
it doesn't work.
Do it the other way first and then you'll see how they get on. You know.
Yeah.
You see how they react.
Yeah. That was your way of doing it.
That was my way of doing it. Yeah. I.
You got on well with them?
I got on well with them. I. But then very often those times you'd get some bloke who's sent here a contract and he's one of these fellas who might walk about with his hands in his pocket all day and all he'd do is grumble and why don't they do this and why don't they do that? I said to this fellow one day, I said, why did you take your hands in your pocket? You do something else. You were sent here to do so and so. And I said, you were sent here to do it. And I said, I'm doing it.
With his hands in his pocket.
Hands in his pocket, grumbling away.
You meet all sorts.
Meet all sorts.
Yeah.
I remember the time we were in the hall now. The Irish were pretty hard to get at the time because there was a lot of work about the place, but we had five or six anyway, and we got a foreman, John, who was a Scotchman. I think he was married out in Devon or somewhere, but. He's one of those blokes would come in the morning, he would be in the office and he would either get the cup of tea and he would have to get the paper and at the same time then lunchtime would come, he'd go down the pub and along with some of the office staff and so forth. But the joiners were working like maybe a mile or two away somewhere, the main office wasn't. He'd be down the main office and every time I would go up on the site, the joiners wanted material, they wanted this. So I used to do a lot of the running for them. So one day I thought to myself, that's what he's for, I'll have a chat with him. So I went into him anyway, and he was sitting doing the crossword puzzle. This was after I'm coming up from the pub, you see.
Yeah, doing the crossword.
So I said, got his name now, you know. I said, the Chinese, you know, I said, is working up in such an area. I said, there's good miles from here. I said, every time I go up there, I said, they're looking for material. I said, I'm doing the running, you're doing the fucking sitting. So I said, you'd best get up there and stay with them. He threw down the doing. He says, they're not a good joiner in Hull, he said. That was answering me. And he went up and he insulted the. He went up and he pushed them on the side and he told them they were good for nothing. The whole lot dropped tools like that and they walked away. So next thing I met the boss, the head boss that we had, he came up the dock. Flashing his lights at me, he stopped. He said, the judges is all jacked. I also expect they would be. What are we going to do now? He said, well, that's the first thing you do is go back down to your office. I said, you have a phone. Ja, den tanzen wir uns alle, aber ich glaube, dass der Herr Leute hier von der Stadt. Und als er dann talkte zu den Jönes, so the Jönes waren all there waiting to get the cards on und what about a chat with them. So what happened, boys? Oh, we wouldn't work for that fella. He told us the one that captured them in Hull. Oh, well, I said, don't worry about it anymore. I said, he's on the train for London. I said, oh, I want you to stand back. Oh, that's all right. He says, hey, we have to work for him. He says, we'll stay. The whole lottery just all started back at again.
Yeah,
you
know? No problem.
Oh, it was the way you...
Yeah. The way you handled it.
The way you handled it,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Oh, it was... lots of interesting things like that happen at Country.
It is, yeah. Would you do it all over again, Paddy? You have no regrets?
I'd love to go back and do a lot of it all again.
Yeah.
But time runs out, that's the trouble.
Yeah, but as a youngster, as a wee boy, you were itchy, you said you wanted
you're
to.
You were always itchy. I was looking for, even at school, I was always thinking about, you'd hear about people going to Britain and going to here. I was always thinking about foreign fields, you know. Yeah. It would be nice to be out there. At the same time, sometimes you'd get there, you'd say to yourself, I wish I'd have stayed at home.
No, but your dad did that, and his dad before that, you know,
that
your granddad. And
they all done that.
Yeah, so you wanted to be a part of it. And
funny story, too, I remember as we used to be, we boys would be, my dad would be going back, the train was running at the time. And there's two stations, there was one down here and then there was one at Creasley. And I remember him and a lot of other men going down to get the train and going over to Britain. But there was one old fella from Downings, and he was a married man in Downings, and he always worked in the same contract as my father was on. But he had a wife and family in Downings, and the youngest of them was a year old, but the last time he was in Downings, this fella was a year old. And when they would fall out, they had, he never went back. And even when I went out in the world then, he was still working on the contracts. He was staying up in Patlari, a real old man. But we were getting moved, you know, before what the Heathers came. We get moved from Newcastle to go to the Heathers came, and we had to stop off down in Ayrshire for a few weeks because I had the accommodations. But anyway, this old boy went on into Kilmarnock. He wouldn't travel with us. He knew the place he was there before. He booked into this lodging house, and while he was booking in, there were a young fella gathering up his bits and pieces. He was after paying for his room, and the boy on the side said, yes, that's what your name. So he gave his name. He was a young fella, took a jump, and he looked at him. And the old boy thought, you see, he was some white guy, he might be weighing him up. So he got his room, and there was a key, and he went up to his room. And the young fella says, he'll have to come down sometime, he said. And the young fellow waited and watched, and he come down the stairs. It must have been 10 o'clock at night. He might come down then and go out for a pint, you know. So the young fellow says to him, I had to say your name was Patrick Herody. Aye, young fellow, he says, that's what I said. He says, I'm Charlie Herody. I could be a son of his. That was the son
he was the son.
25 years exactly after we saw him.
They were to meet just...
I had met.
Yeah.
We went on then, a few weeks after we went on to the Heathers games. He took the young fellow with him, and they got on very well together. And he died up in Stirlingshire somewhere, and buried up there. Wonderful story, you see.
Yeah. But it's an awful sad thing that all Irish people like you left home and
that's right,
lost link with their home and never returned. And
never returned, no.
Yeah. You know, as you said about your cousin coming out with the name Duffy and
that's right,
so
aye.
Irish, but then he was, you know, he'll never come back to this country. Or
no, he did not. No. That's wonderful. I thought.
You're glad to be back home, Paddy.
Oh, nice to be back. Funny to see, I heard a lot of people talking the same thing, you know, and said, it's always nice to have a place of your own that you can throw in the suitcase when
exactly.
you come. You're not depending on relations.
No.
And I always had that in mind because I bought this place in 53 when I was working down in Wales, and was just lying here for years then.
My it was brother, for sale, Paddy.
My brother grazed out here and different things. So, bought the days then, 1959 or 60. I was over here for a holiday, and you hear people talking about building bungalows and building things. So I got a contractor in here, and I gave him the contract.
And he built
the house? He built the house. He done the lot for me. And it was here when I wanted it then. We put a lot of pieces onto it since, like, yeah, ports and different things. But this was there, it was your
exactly,
own.
Exactly, and you're only a mile or less from
that's
your
all home. You didn't always come back and hardly see I went up to the own home. My brother was there, that to a young family. Oh, it was a welcome, surely, but mm-hmm, it still wasn't the same.
You wanted your own car.
You wanted your own place, yeah, to have it that you could.
And it's brilliant to be where you were brought up.
Like, you know. I.
So you're a happy man, Paddy.
Happy man, I. Then it's like that, the own home, now all the next generation's gone.
Yeah.
See, my brother's family's all scattered. Mm-hmm. One of them next door here with his own new house. There's another one down in Ireland with a new house. There's two of them out in the St. John's country with their own houses. And the girl, one girl married up here in Bob, their own home. The other one married down in Meath.
But Paddy, see, in general in life, is life better now, or is it even as good as it was when you were young?
Britain.
No, just here in this
country. There's a lot of times have changed. Oh Christ, a lot of better times here now. But you wouldn't get a young fella to do now what we would do, go out and help your neighbour with it. Hey, be looking for pain.
Yeah.
You know.
Different attitude. Like,
oh, different attitude. And probably him on the dole, maybe. Yeah. He wouldn't do a good turn.
But the work, though, in general, is not here, Paddy. Like, I mean, it wasn't... when you were young, either, you had to leave.
No, there were very few. Yeah. Even when I'm 18, you know, you just have this odd road to make it, or clean the rubber, or do something.
Yeah.
That'd be for a short period of time, you know. But them booming years there, see, the place was booming with building and young folks, yeah, all working now. Oh, my nephews are all very good to us here. This fellow next door is always there when you want them. Anything you want to do, or the fellow down in arts. But if you get any young fellow come to you now to do any, God, there's £20 wouldn't pay him.
No.
No.
Anyway, Paddy, we'll leave it here today now, and thanks for your time.
Oh, don't bother.
And all your stories.
Don't bother.
There's a lot. We tried to cover a lot, like Paddy, but... I'm sure
we did. I could do all that stuff, all the years you could go on bits and pieces, you know, and all that about. If you want to know where John Nelly lives, I can show you.
I do want to know where John Nelly lives.
We'll pass Neil McGillabridge's place.
Oh, we'll go up today, will we?
Hmm?
We'll go up now, will we?
Aye, you can go up, I'll take you over, I'll show you the road, and you can call back and see John somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thanks very much for
no
your time,
buddy. Thanks a lot, yourself.
Fair play to you.